sailor on a sinking ship. I could be a vagabond with a split lip. I could be Supergirl, but you wouldn't know. Look inside of me and find a brand new show.
Contact James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at F2F at innersights.com. That's F2F at innersites.com. There is a video chat room to see James in action as well as other F2F listeners. www.ivisit.com has the free software to download and access the Feet to Fire video chat room. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
All right, we are back live. Going through it a cold here, so excuse the voice. Paul Heterloos is the master craftsman and home designer, originally from the Netherlands. After studying alternative energy sources for nearly a decade, he created the world's most complete natural element harvesting home. He calls his creation the Oasis Hybrid House because it is completely independent from grid power, heat, and water. At the same time, the house is seamlessly transitions to conventional power when needed, allowing for bank financing and facilitating an easy transition into environmental responsible living without a forced lifestyle change. Oasis Hybrid Homes is the website. And welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you very much, James.
Yes, I actually I was to the Netherlands a couple times. I went to Eindhoven, and I really loved it there. And you're in Montana now, so the biggest thing I could think of between the Netherlands and Montana is the space.
The space, and it's mountainous instead of flat. Right. There's not so much water as in the Netherlands, and there's a lot less people.
Yeah, I drove through Montana a couple times, and it's one of those places I'm torn between, if I could live anywhere I'd like, between Montana and New Mexico. In Arizona, so maybe I'd have to have two homes.
Montana is definitely a fantastic place. We live north of Yellowstone Park in Paradise Valley, and it literally is a beautiful paradise here. And interestingly enough, you know, Yellowstone Park is about a quarter of the size of the Netherlands. But in the Netherlands, there are 16 million people crammed in that space. And for a comparison, Montana is as big as France. But it has the amount of people as there are in Amsterdam, about a million. Wow. So that's it for your comparison. It's a complete opposite from the Netherlands, really.
I guess what I liked about visiting there was the people. It's my first experience going to Europe, and I noticed a marked difference in general. The people, anyway, that I knew visited there, they were a really family-oriented people. They were oriented relationships. They would talk. People would come over and talk. And they had one TV in the house, as opposed to an American household, which has, like, five.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the size of house. And as far as that goes, I think Dutch people are just as TV-oriented and modern-day citizens as Americans are. As far as that goes, they're very similar. But they are family-oriented and they're a very open society. They've always been a very open society and let people in from other countries and and took the leadership in anti-discrimination laws and euthanasia, and they're very forward-thinking people, I should say.
Well, looking forward, forward-thinking into your home, some of these pictures are amazing. You know, I expected, when I hear a hybrid home off the grid, I expected to see something like NASA, you know, like there's tubes buried underground or something. But when I look at your house, it's just, it's beautiful. It's open, a lot of light, it's airy. It's kind of like goes against my predisposition to think of an energy-efficient house as being something very small.
Well, that's exactly what we've been trying to do, is to make it more mainstream America, so that it is not, you know, look like a straw bale house or a house made from old tires, which in itself I think is an amazing thing too, and has its own market. But I believe that there are many people that rather have a conventional house and being able to finance it through a bank, and yet save money and be good for the environment along the way while they're living there.
Well, one of the first things that strike me, besides the size, is the amount of windows. Another thing I would have guessed was that you would have very low amount of windows, but there seems to be an awful lot here.
Well, that's because we are capturing the sunlight. There is an atrium that is half of an octagon, and it faces east, south, and west. And so when the sun comes up, it hits those the thermal mass that we have put in that atrium and also in the living room. And it warms that thermal mass, which exists of concrete, brick, heavy dirt, water. That all those elements are in the house, and the sun warms those up, and then as it is being stored, it is able to generate heat for the house, or keep the house warm rather, throughout the night through airflow and radium tubing in the flooring throughout the house.
Oh, so that's
the reason why we have so many windows, really.
So, but the windows, I imagine, have to be geared to be kind of a one-way heat thing. Light comes in, infrared is created, and it's kept in. Is it certain type of panes of glass? Or?
It's actually just regular double pane clear windows. No tinting on there, nothing. The window walls are very tightly constructed. They have no air gaps in there. It's really, we paid a lot of attention doing that, very tight. There's no drafts coming through there, yet the sun shines through there and heats up that thermal mass, like I was saying, you know, heavy stuff that is present in the house, and absorbs it like a battery. And then at night, yeah, it cools off, but it still has that radiant heat in the thermal mass that was amassed during the day.
And this
is how it works.
Something like stone, soil, I mean, it's not some kind of a space-age material. It's kind of...
No, all simple materials. But the one thing we've done differently from the designs in the 70s, which, this is called passive solar design, which has been for decades now. But what we did is we created two exterior walls. One is the first one that the sunlight comes through the windows, and then there is a secondary exterior wall that connects to the living room. And I call it exterior because it also has two sets of massive double pane windows that are inset indoors. And they can open and literally make that atrium a part of the living room. But you can also close it at night when it gets too frisky or the temperature balances out between the living room and the atrium. So that way there is control. And in the summertime, especially when, you know, it can be 90, 100 degrees sometimes, then you want to close those double doors to separate that atrium from the living room and have an airflow going through just the atrium so that the heat gets evacuated out of there. That was the main problem in the 70s where people literally were frying in their house during the summertime. Too much sunlight in your house will create a problem.
So I would imagine then a sophisticated system of vents tied to temperature or time or season or something like that would help this flowing of air.
Absolutely. The house is, I think you can see that on the pictures on the in the website. The atrium is connected to the living room, and that living room has it's a two-story high open design that, you know, gives you a lot of ice space, so to speak. And in the top, where the heat naturally wants to collect, in the high end, the upper part of the ceiling there, we have installed some vents that can pull hot air from there and distribute it in the north sides of the house where we don't have that passive solar.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So it seems to be rather ingenious to balance this all, the right combination of windows and vents and positioning and so forth.
Yes, it's not really that hard, and it's being done. I mean, the thermal siphoning of warm air to places that are colder has been done, has been proven to work. It's just all these elements together. So if you don't get it, because you can't turn the sun down, that's the disadvantage of it. There's not a dialing knob on the sun to turn it down and say, I want less heat now or I want more heat. So that's where that thermal buffer comes in. And then if you regulate it with doors and ventilation systems, then you can actually use it quite profitably.
So what is preventing? I mean, you have windows, but I'm assuming that the construction of the non-windowed material is going to be very non-conductive as far as heat and cold would be, insulative. I mean, the ceiling or whatever that's not windows, I'm assuming that's going to be somewhat insulated to keep the heat in or keep the heat out, so to speak.
Oh, you mean the walls that do not have the windows? Correct. Yes, they are heavily insulated. They're actually about 14 inches thick, and they consist of two separate walls that are that have insulation in them. About R48, I believe it is, on the walls, and then in the ceilings we have about 16 inches of insulation as well, and that is an R52. So it's heavily insulated. Montana is a pretty cold place in the winter, and but the sun is fantastic. We have beautiful winter sunny days, we can supply our own heat pretty much all year round. With a wood stove and a fire here and there, we can definitely keep the house perfectly warm.
Well, did you say 60 inches is the ceiling? 60?
16 inches, yeah.
Oh, 16, okay.
16, yeah.
16. Oh, like, wow.
1 6, yeah.
That's pretty thick.
Right. But the most characteristic thing of this house is the water household. We actually collect our own fresh water from the roof, and we even melt our snow water through a hydronic heated gutter system that is around the house, and so that we can actually collect every inch of snow as well as water in the summertime and in the springtime, because we only get about 19 inches of precipitation here a year, which is barely enough for have a household on a normal size house.
Right.
That all needs to be is also a fairly complicated calculation. How much roof space you need and how much storage you need to bridge your dry periods in the year, but that's something we did. We have 10,000 gallons of storage capacity around the house. 10,000, yes.
Oh, wow. That's one heck of a tank.
We needed that much because we hardly have any rain whatsoever between, I'm going to say, the 15th of August all the way through October. Very often we don't get anything, not a drop of rain. And so to bridge that dry period, you need that much storage.
Do you have it underground, the tanks?
They're underground, yeah, because that was another challenge here in Montana because we have cold winters, obviously, and we needed to deal with freezing issues.
Right.
And we have those tanks all buried around underneath decks that are wrapping the house, basically.
Because, you know, I was... I had a house in the 90s, and rather than waste the electricity of the well to water the plants, I thought an idea was to collect some water. Now, I didn't put any math into it, so I went out and I got 355-gallon barrels, and I only had one downspout on the house. The way they designed it, it has just one downspout. And so so it rained. I had a normal kind of a rainstorm, and I went out to see how much water was there, and it was just overflowing. I didn't realize how much water hits your roof if you collect it. It's amazing.
It's quite interesting to see how much water comes from your roof, any regular house roof space, yes. But since we are using it for everything in the house, including drinking water, we have to filter it. So what we basically do is we put us in charge of our own water supply, our own power supply, our own heat. And we've had several instances where the power went out and we didn't even know that it was out. And people were telling us that we have a power outage. And we had to be told. So, but it's a great feeling to, at the one hand, be in charge of your own supplies, the most necessary supplies that we need. And also be good for the environment by having a lesser carbon footprint because every kilowatt that doesn't have to be generated by a coal plant, of course, helps the environment. Yet the house is constructed in such a way that there really isn't any lifestyle change necessary. You don't have to chase your children down the house to tell them to turn the lights off every time. You know, which could be not so good for your relationships. So that helps, I believe. And then because it's constructed in quite a conventional way in many ways, conventional materials have been used, it can also just be financed by a bank rather than, you know, I know many people that have a straw bale house and are on off the grid. They have a hard time kind of getting financing. And if they then want to sell the house, they have a hard time finding a buyer because most people can't pay out of pocket for these things. So,
right. Now, why is this one sellable as opposed to, another one? I mean, of course, it looks better than a house made out of tires, so that's going to help. But why is this something like this financeable?
It's because if you take a house and you go to a bank, they want to know what's the heat source, how do you generate your electrical, who's the supplier of your electrical, where does your water come from, and all these things. Do you have a well or not a well, or are you connected to the city water? If any of those things is out of the ordinary or misses, then they don't want to finance your house because it's unconventional. You don't have any compatibles that they can say, well, the house is worth so much money because other houses of the same kind have been sold in the past.
I see.
How banks operate on those premises.
Yeah. So do you have, like, a conventional heating and electricity and all that as well in there?
That's right. See, and that's why it doesn't require lifestyle change, because all these things that we have, that I just mentioned, are our priority in the use of the energy and the water and the heat. The natural resources are being harvested and stored somehow and being used in the house. Yet if we run out of electrical because we have a 50-man party in the house or something like that during Christmas, the AC or the power grid will put some juice in batteries automatically. It's all automated in the house. So, and the same with the water. If you run out of water, those 10,000 gallons are being used up. It operates the same as a toilet reservoir operates. You know, when you have low water, it starts filling it up, and then at some point you can stop the flow coming in because when you have a low float type of a deal. So you don't have to be conscious all the time if you don't want to. You can if you want to, but you don't have to. So conservative with water that you make it across the, you know, through the dry period. If you're worried about it, then you don't have to, because you know, the well or the city will water in the tanks.
Well, you know, it's interesting because around here, people who have solar panels or windmills, what they tend to do is they live off the grid, and when weather conditions are nice, they will sell the electricity back to the grid. But you're just the opposite. You live off the grid, and you use the grid when your conditions need it.
That's exactly right. And the reason why, you know, we've been, it's how do you approach, why do you do it? You know, do you do it just to save money, or do you do it to be independent and to be in charge of your own supplies? Of course, when you sell electricity back to the grid, what you're having, and they call that a grid tie system, and you do not have any storage, you don't have any batteries. Anytime your house doesn't need the electricity, and yet it's available to be made on the, by the solar panels or the windmill, it will then go back into the grid, which is a great thing to do as well. But you're not independent from the grid that way. Because if the grid falls out, and let's say it's nighttime and you don't have any sun coming into your solar panels, then you are down the creek as well again. So here in Montana, there's for-profit electrical companies and non-profit electric companies, and they operate by different rules. The ones that are for profit take your grid tie electrical back, and then they will tally up your scores, so to speak, throughout the year. And in the wintertime, when you need electrical, they will give it to you for free because you have a credit that you built up in the summer. But the non-for-profit companies don't have to do that. They do the cutoff every month, which doesn't help, because in the summertime you have an excess of electricity, and you basically give it for free to them. And in the winter you need more electrical than you can generate, mostly, and you'd have to buy it. So that wouldn't help.
No. And I like your idea of batteries. What because it's when I learned about your house, it was funny. It came up in conversation with Chris over at Polestar.
Yeah.
Because
Kelly, yeah.
Right, because while we were, I was talking with him about what I'm doing in my studio, and a couple of things I'm doing is putting in double insulation and all that, and I was going to collect the water and so on. And it brought up, and he told me about what you were doing. And one of the things I asked him, which really caught my interest, was, now it's one thing to go off the grid, but what you do here really is not that much more expensive than if you built, say, this house to be just sucking off the grid. I mean, it's not a tremendous extra expenditure.
It is not. I have said in the beginning that I thought it was 30%, but I believe it to be less than that. It's actually only about 15%, I think, more than a regular house, you know, if you go by the square feet, so to speak, square foot house.
15%. Well, that's amazing.
About 15. Yeah, about 15%, and it's a really great way to live because. In some ways, you're actually responsible for your own waste as well, because we have a freshwater system, but we also have a greywater recycling system that feeds the plant that is in that atrium of which you have seen the picture on the website.
Right.
And so, you know, whatever goes in there is basically going into your plants, and we have all kinds of vegetables and tomatoes and things growing in there, and we've been eating throughout the winter, throughout the two last winter, actually, from the same tomato plants.
Oh, wow. Well, let's put a hold on there. We'll get into that.
Yeah, sure.
And many other questions about this.
Okay.
As we talk with this, I would say it's the true use of the word hybrid home. I mean, the hybrid cars they have today aren't really... They're just another way to run on gasoline because they don't let you charge them, or there's no other alternative ways. But in this case, we have a true use of our hybrid, which has to be totally self-sufficient and also plug into the grid as needed. It's just fascinating. As we continue talking with Powell and his home and website, if you'd like to look at the pictures along with us, oasishybridhomes.com. And we'll continue after this break. Want to get the word out about your website or blog that addresses topics found on Feet to the Fire? Send us 20 seconds of either proofread text or a voice recording, and we will randomly play it on both our live and archive versions of the show. Email the audio or text to f2f@innersights.com. Are you getting your greens? I'm James Othianjik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Now you can have your greens and drink them too with Innerfood by Inner Health Botanicals. Innerfood is 70% organic and 100% natural without fillers and is a whole food product totally assimilated by the body. Innerfood is spirulina, chlorella, dulse, kelp, spinach, alfalfa, barley, wheatgrass, rosehip, beetroot, and much more in real amounts. Not just a sprinkle to fill out an inflated but impotent list of ingredients. Just mix a tablespoon in your protein shake or in your favorite fruit juice and you are good to go and go and go. Other greens on the shelf typically weigh 300 grams and sell for between $35 and $70. Innerfood is a full 400 grams, 33% more, for $39.95 plus shipping. Simply go to our website, feettofire.com, and click on any InnerHealth botanical banner, and you're ready to order. Or call 866-762-9238 and be sure to mention you heard them on Feet to the Fire. Innerfood, building health from the insides out. Most people think of addictions relating to drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. However, obsessive-compulsive actions taken to excessive levels have the same biochemical goal. They stimulate the creation of natural feel-good hormones, but at a cost that causes more harm in the long run. And prescribed drugs are often many times more dangerous and addictive than the symptoms they aim to treat. AddictionSupplements.com have proven supplements that supply the brain with the nutrients it needs to naturally rebalance the biochemical system, which is the real cure for the real cause. AddictionSupplements.com has cutting-edge supplements designed by real science and real doctors, such as Dr. Charles Gant, MD. Interested in turning your life around? Point your browser to AddictionSupplements.com.
Make sure you stay tuned, because you're listening to Feet to the Fire.
Could you feed your family for a year, 2 years, or more from your garden if you had to? Do you have the right kind of seeds? Can you save your seeds from your harvest to plant next year? Heirloom Organics non-hybrid seed packs are a sustainable gardening choice of home, homestead, and professional gardeners throughout North America. Heirloom Organics seed packs are designed with your specific space, light, and nutritional needs in mind. A 1-pound selection of 22 seed varieties that can feed 2 people for a year for just $99. Got a family? The family pack has 27 seed varieties to feed a family of four. There's even a homestead pack that has 31 varieties of seeds to feed eight people for 1 year for under $250. And don't forget, these are organically grown and 100% non-genetically modified. And forget the Terminator gene that prevents you from saving seeds for next year's crop. The heirloom organic seeds can be harvested and saved from each generation to be planted the next year. Just go to our website at feed2fire.com and click on the heirloom ad to access a lifetime of natural nutrition and wholesome eating the way it was meant to be.
James, live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feet2fire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
Talk about peace of mind. How about having a beautiful home, lots of space, lots of light, and have it actually heat, cool, supply water, and provide a growing area to grow your own food so that you can support yourself, or I should say let the world support you, the system, the planetary system, rather than plugging into people like Enron. Well, that's what we're talking about here with Paul Hederlos. And welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, James. And that is exactly the case. I think with all the problems that we see around us and that face the planet and that face our nation, this is something we can do ourselves. You know, we can help in our own small way the environment by, you know, buying a hybrid car, but also investing in hybrid technologies that are that will save on wearing down on the environment, that will save the requirement for oil, coal plants, you know, to generate electricity while it's free from the sun. To be in charge of your own water, have your gray water grow tomato plants, and then pick your tomato plants in the wintertime especially, and go to your neighbor and change them for, barter them for eggs, is a great deal.
No, I'm going to get into the gray water. Well, let me go back to the hybrid car. In order to have the right analogy, you would have to have some type of a solar-driven or wind-driven charger to charge your car and use the gasoline just as a backup. But the way they make them, at least so far, you have to use the gasoline anyway. And it's like they're still, you're still using gasoline to generate electricity rather than allowing other things to do it.
Yes, and in the hybrid home, you do not have to use electricity from the grid.
That's what makes yours, you know, really a big difference.
Let's say if there was a person that always lived in a nice or suburban home and was used to, you know, using his big screen TV and all the modern conveniences, you know, five computers in the house and what have you. That you can all do in this Oasis house, and you would only have an electrical bill of maybe $50 at the end of the month. But you can also ease, as you're doing that, you can ease into a more environmentally responsible lifestyle and turn your lights off everywhere you go, you know, not have the more... adapt the lifestyle to when the power is available freely from the sun, and cut your life down a bit, like that modern life, I would say, to fit the environment, the way things are being made available to us.
Now, what is the? I'm looking at the roof now, and it has to collect rainwater and also melt rainwater. So I can see it's dark as far as to harvest the.
Okay. Yes.
What is it made of so that you can bring
it's
the...
steel.
Steel.
It's made from paint. It's steel that with a coat of paint on it.
Which is so... I imagine the paint is somehow acceptable to have water that you're going to drink go on it.
Yes. It's a very high-grade paint that you see all over the place on steel paneling that they use nowadays on exterior buildings. But the filtration system is also quite extensive because besides that possibility of whatever the roof surface can put in your water, there's all kinds of bacteria that you could have also in your water unless you get rid of them somehow through filtering. And that is, we have a four-stage filter design that stops this pile of gravel and sand in the down, just over the downspout, so it keeps the big stuff out, you know, leaves, what have you, that you might have in the gutter. And then once it's in the tanks and gets pumped up to the house, to the faucets, before it does that, it goes through a 20 micron and then a 3 micron carbon combination filter, and then through a UV filter to kill any possible microbes, bacteria, whatever you might have in there. But I've had the water tested on a regular basis, and it's beautiful. It's better than I can get out of the ground or from the city sure.
So,
even here in Montana, amazingly enough, Livingston has problems with their railroad yard there where contamination is going into the groundwater and has in the past caused health problems to the citizens. And this is even in Montana, that is a happening thing as far as the purity in the water that we get to our taps.
No, as far as the gray and I don't know if they'd use the word black waters. So the gray water would be defined like this, doing your dishes or taking a shower, that kind of water? Is that would be the gray?
Gray water, that's right. Gray water is anything but the toilet.
The toilet, okay.
Water that comes from the toilet. That's considered black water. We, in our house, have put the kitchen. ocean sink as well on the Blackwater system, because there's so much cooked food and raw food and what have you going into the Greywater system if you connected that to it, that, you know, it would be hard to make it work in a system that
we
have.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. So when you collect your Greywater, I'm assuming you have some place for it to be collected, or is it immediately deposited, say, like in the plants or...
No, it actually goes to a box that is like that has plexiglass box, I should say, that is placed over a double laundry sink that we have constructed, and it's kind of a tapered thing sink. You know how that looks like,
right.
And when you stack them on top of each other, there's about an inch of space between the two bottoms, and we connected a irrigation system in that 1-inch space. The top sink has some holes in it, and the water through there, and any possible particles, they are just laying on the surface. And the sun, because the box is placed in the atrium as well, the south sun hits it during the day, and it gets pretty warm in there. So it you know, it erodes over time. With another splash of water and lots of heat, it erodes and migrates into that irrigation system, and it is being used for the nutrition of the plants. And it works basically like a gray water septic system.
The sun would promote growth of bacteria of some type, or algae or something that would...
Well, if it's about 250, 300 degrees in there, there's not a whole lot that can live there. But it has to be, you know, from time to time, you have to clean it out. That is true. And I do that about, maybe twice a year. And it's not a very big job. It takes about 15 minutes. And but this is the thing. If you're in charge of your own water supply, and you're in charge of your plants, and you're in charge of your own electrical supply, you have to check these things. You have to check your windmill, you know, make sure that the blades aren't going to spin off and kill your neighbor's dog. We don't want that. So, the water, fresh water collection tanks that are underneath the decks, they have to be cleaned once a year. I wash them down and clean them completely up so that, you know, a new fresh batch can go in there. And I do that usually with in fall when the tanks are low with water.
Right. Okay, so that's the gray. And in Blackwater, I imagine you have a septic system out in the...
Yes. There is a conventional septic system that takes care of the Blackwater, correct.
Right. And what is actually the gray water used for? We mentioned the plants.
The gray water goes through that erosion box that I was speaking about in the atrium, and then gets into that irrigation system that sits underneath 12 inches of topsoil and above 18 inches of gravel and sand. And so that gray water goes in there, it gets, partly gets used by the plants that grow in that 12 inches of topsoil, all kinds of vegetables and what have you. What is not being used by the plants drains down to the floor of this trough that contains the dirt and the gravel, and just by gravity flows to the end of the planter, which has a 55-gallon drum, and collects that water, and then it gets reintroduced into the house as flushing water for the toilets.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then eventually it makes its way to the septic tank.
Well, that, you know, that's really great, because you're using water to its fullest. I mean, there's no waste.
There's no waste, and that is precisely the only way to get around that here in Montana. If I were to live in Seattle, I would do it completely different. So that's the other element of this design is, in Seattle you need less storage as far as fresh water goes, and maybe you don't even need a gray water system, but you could do it. But you then need more solar panels because there's a lot more cloudy days there.
Right.
We generate electricity. So as far as volume, storage, and the things you need, that is very depending on where you live.
All right. Well, let's go to the electrical. I see you have a windmill and the panels. And I assume you have an array of batteries. And how does that all work?
We have two kW windmill and then solar panels to supply 5 kW. So there's a total of a 7 kW system. We have 24 gel-type batteries, which are ideal for residential use because they don't have any outgassing like normal lead-acid batteries would be, you know, car batteries
right.
and things. You have to ventilate them, which is, you know, in a household, I think, is somewhat of a dangerous situation. But then what happens, we have inverters, two 3,500 watt inverters that then invert the electrical to normal households, 110 household power in the house. And so everything beyond that point, beyond the electrical room, so to speak, where the electricity comes in the form of 24 volts and then gets transferred to 110, everything is normal. All normal appliances from the off-the-shelf appliances and everything in the household is like any other household.
So that means like the refrigerator would be one you would just buy in the store and plug it in.
Yeah, it's just I think we have Amanda, actually.
Yeah.
We have an Amanda refrigerator, yes. So a normal off-the-shelf refrigerator, yes.
Now, in the event of, say, cloudy days and no wind, I would assume you have some hookup to the electrical grid. Is it charge the batteries? Or
well, that's exactly it. We have... at the inverters, there's also a computer which is almost it's a monitor, and it can be set to different things. And there's the switch between the DC and the AC, you know, the power that comes from the solar panels and the power that might come in from the grid.
Right.
And there's a switch there, and this computer regulates that switch to switch to AC or grid power if the batteries are to a certain point that they need to be sustained by that.
So what would happen then is you would switch over, your house is now on the grid, and then
it's all automated. You won't even notice
right.
it.
And then the grid then would charge up the batteries, and at some point it would switch back.
Yes.
And if all of a sudden the wind picks up and the batteries get to a certain level, then it switches back. Well, that's I mean, what percentage of time is it completely on its own versus using grid backup?
Well, considering that I'm one of those people that doesn't like chasing the kids and all that, and I have three teenagers in the house with their friends and all that, and I have a lovely wife, and we live in this 3,000 square foot house, we encounter an electrical bill every month between $35 and $50.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty nice. And it is certainly possible. I mean, I've been thinking of doing that, and I get a little bit of resistance here, but from the family, to just flip that AC switch off for a month and see how we would do, completely not have the availability of grid power, which I can do that by just flipping a switch.
And as far as the solar panels and windmills, these are just kind of conventional ones that you can buy?
Yes, just conventional. I believe the windmill is a Whisper 2000, and then the solar panels are Mitsubishi solar panels. But that was just a choice that we made at that time.
Right, right.
And there's so much progress being made in solar panels, especially, that, you know, it's like computers. When you buy them, they're old.
Right, right. Now, when you figure this out, the solar panels, windmills, they have a lifespan. I mean, how long would they last before they need to be replaced, and how does that fit in with the price, you know, the long term?
Right. The solar panels, I believe that they can last. I mean, there have been arrays placed that are 20 years or older and that are still functioning. They have that much of a lifespan or more. The windmill, I think, depends a lot of on how you surface them throughout the years. You should really look at them at least once a year. And I'm very accustomed to it, that every time I go by there, I listen for strange noises or if there's anything might be going on there. I've never had a problem so far with it, but it's just one of those things you do because it's a mechanical piece of equipment that spins around in 80 miles an hour wind sometimes here. So you got to be on top of that. But I think with good maintenance, that one can also last 20 years without a problem. The batteries, as a matter of fact, are guaranteed for 20 years. 20 seems to be the magic number there.
Oh. Excuse me. Try to hit the cough button, but it doesn't always work. Back to the inside, in the air, is there any filtration needed for the air? I mean, how is the air out in Montana? I mean, it sounds like it'd be pretty nice, but I don't know.
Oh, it's very clean. It's very clean. We live, not near any highway or anything like that too much. The nearest highway is Highway 89, and it's about 3 miles down the hill, so we don't really see that much. And beyond that, there's not all that much traffic on it anyway, so we're good there. Air filtration, I think in an area that would have worse or not such clean air, it wouldn't be much of a problem to generate or to filter the air that comes in, like you would do in a more normal house, too, to replace your air.
Now, is that on the wing of the house, is that a garage that I'm looking at?
Correct, yeah. The one wing, there's really two wings that extend from the core, which is an octagon-shaped building. And the one wing is a two-car garage, and it also houses that electrical room where the power gets transferred. And the other wing is a bedroom wing. Has two bedrooms and what we call an away room that houses like a little home office. And we have our dining table at the moment there. It's a nice big room, yeah.
So the air would be heated, we'll say, in the center, and then it's piped into the bedroom wing.
Yes, correct. From that upper level, but there's a few heat sources here. One is the hydronic piping in the concrete slab that is everywhere in the living room area as well as in the bedrooms, and by a small circulating pump, that heat is always being equalized. Even the passive heat that's only can heat up a certain portion of the slab that gets exposed to the sun. But it will take that heat and equalize it throughout the whole house by this hydronic system that has just a small 2-volt little pump on it
that
runs on a little thermostat.
Now, another thing, when I was talking with Chris, he mentioned, and I was just kind of looking at your website, it reminded me that you're actually kind of putting heat into the ground during the summer and then pulling it out in the winter. Is that?
That's correct. The central part of the house, which is an octagon, is actually the only portion that is 2 stories high from the ground level, but it also has a basement underneath it. And if you look, I would have to send you a drawing, I think, but if you looked at it, you could see that the core, that octagon core, being only the basement where the warm water tanks are being held that hold the heater, that hold the solar heat that comes from the panels. And any excess heat in the summertime when the sun is oftentimes really hot and the three tanks that hold the water down there are maxed out at some point and need a heat dump. And what happens then, and there's a pipe that is circling around the octagon and will give that heat off to the earth that's underneath the crawl space on the that is underneath the wings of the one bedroom wing and the atrium itself. So it will give the heat back to those to the ground that is amassed around those pipes. And it won't do a whole lot. It won't bring the temperature up a lot. But over the whole summer, it might increase the temperature maybe by a couple of degrees. But because it takes such a massive amount to actually heat that soil up, it will also take a long time to get rid of it. You know, if you consider that the sun has not been able to heat the earth much more beyond 4 feet from the surface, it takes a massive amount to even do a little bit there.
Okay, well, we'll stop there. I have some more on that. It's pretty, yeah. That was pretty ingenious. It never even occurred to me to heat the ground up as like a battery, a heat battery. It's pretty clever. Actually, all of this is pretty clever, so hold on for a minute.
Sure.
We'll continue talking to Powell about his really, really fascinating house that I can really say is a hybrid house that allows you to make your own juice, so to speak, and only top it off as you need it. What a great concept. I mean, it's good to have the grid there in case of emergencies, but what if you can actually create most of your own and for about 15% more than the same cost of the house forgetting all this stuff? That's pretty amazing. But hold on, we'll continue after this break to continue live talking about the hybrid home.
You are listening to this program on the IPS network of affiliate stations. Stay tuned for some local affiliate information.
All right, the phones are now cleared and open to take the next caller for our prize giveaway, sponsored by Margie's Beef and Gyros Restaurant in Westmont, Illinois. You must be 18 years or older and have to pick up your prize in person at Margie's within 30 days. The odds are great. The trick is simple. Just call in, and if we answer the phone, you win. 888-863-2722 is that number. When you eat at Margie's, you are a winner every time with their great food and good deals, like their special discount for cash buyers. Every Monday and Tuesday from 3 p.m. till 9 p.m., an order over $30 paid with cash receives an instant discount of $6. It is a great way to break the boring microwave dinner routine without breaking your bank. And this is not a limited selection of items. This cash discount applies to anything they offer. And while you're there, don't forget to pick up the special coupon book with $126 in meal savings from now till December 2010. The coupon book is free, the deals are real, and the food is great. Like me, do you prefer vegetarian or vegan items? Margie's has you covered with sandwiches and dinners made to order. Margie's is located at 6410 South Cass Avenue, just south of 63rd Street on Cass Avenue in Westmont, Illinois. Their phone number is 630-852-3260. Better yet, just surf over to eatatmargies.com for all the information you need, from menus to videos. Remember to call in at 888-863-2722 and win every hour on the hour at Feet to Fire. Choose from a prize list that includes a Hamilton Beach delicate clothes dryer that doubles as a great house fan, a Hamilton Beach blender, a Homedics Shiatsu massager, an infrared massager, percussion massager, a paper shredder, speakerphone, 33-piece kitchen combo set, cookware set, stainless steel flask, inkjet printer cartridges, power stapler, durable ring binder, plus more. View pictures and description of the prizes at duraprint.com. Simply click on the Radio Show Video Archives and Links button on the left menu, and then click List of Prizes with Detailed Descriptions on the right-hand list. That's at duraprint.com. You can choose one prize valued at $50 to $100. You must be 18 years or older, and you have to pick up your prize in person at Margie's within 30 days. One of each prize on the list is available each show. The odds are great. The trick is simple. Call now, and if we answer the phone, you win. 888-863-2722. Call in and win. From Feet to Fire, Duraprint.com, and Margie's Beef and Gyros on the web at www.eatatmargies.com.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSync Radio Network of Stations. Live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@intersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yoncik. We are talking live to Powell about his home, which is really awesome. You have to really see it to really see how amazing this is. It's oasishybridhomes.com. And if you are by a computer and you're listening, you can click on that and follow through as we're talking and see some of the amazing pictures that we do have of this house, which looks rather normal, kind of a normal modern home. I would never think that it would be energy self-sufficient, since I would think you'd have to have it like buried underground with tubes coming out of the ground or something. And it actually looks rather nice. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you, James.
Back to the water going into the ground and all that. One of the things I wondered about with being in Montana, I mentioned earlier that if somebody could build a energy efficient home self-sufficient home in the tropics, that would be one thing. But doing it in Montana is another. When you have some pretty cold winters, what happens when the snow covers over your solar collectors in that?
It doesn't happen too often here, but, you know, they're high enough off the ground, and they're made of a very slippery surface, and the and they're at a 45-degree angle. If it happens to have snowed and there's a couple inches on it and there's no sun right away, then I usually go out there with a broom and just broom them off. That takes about 5 minutes.
I guess it would depend. Now, what if you were going to build this house, say, in upper New York, where they get snowstorms that dump, you know, 20 inches of snow at one sitting? I mean, is this a house can be built anywhere, just modified for that particular environment?
I believe that it can be built anywhere, but it has to be adapted to the environment correctly. And if you had 20 feet of snow or 20 inches of snow, you said 20 feet, right? 20 feet in New York.
Yeah, right. I mean, at one time it could get 20 inches at a pop, but they had something like 20 feet over a very short period of time.
Right, right. Well, the 20 inches I don't think would be a problem for solar panels because, you know, the majority would just slide off with a 45-degree angle, which I think would be about right over there as well. It depends on the latitude. But so I would think that there only would stay a couple inches on those solar panels, and they're, you know, people shovel snow off their roofs, and when they get that much snow, because they're concerned about the roof collapsing as well, I believe, in many places. So if it was set up with that intent that they could be swept off or with a broom or with a large wiper or something like that, then that wouldn't be a problem.
Actually, it is a pretty simple answer to the question. I was thinking of it because when I grew up here in Chicago area, very rarely did we sweep off the roof, even if we have big rain, big snow, because the roofs are pitched pretty high.
And pretty steep, yes.
Yeah, then it usually falls off. And so that kind of answered my own question if I would just look at my own roof, I guess.
Well, I happened to be in Grand Forks, North Dakota last week, and apparently it's a business there, just like lawn mowing. It's a business in the summer. There's people that come by, and that's what they do. They climb on the roof and shovel the snow off your roof.
Yeah.
So it employs people, and that's a good thing nowadays.
So I think I've covered some of the systems. I don't know if I missed one. Just pop in there. But why did you start to think? I mean, what you wake up one day and said, you know, I think I want to build a house that's energy sufficient. I mean, is there some kind of a event that
an enlightening event?
Yeah.
The main thing is that I wanted to do something different. You know, I'm 61 years old right now, and I started this house when I was 58, and I've been always very interested in alternative energy, and I've, you know, really could see that if I were to do anything or would make any difference in my life, give my contribution, so to speak, to society, then it would be this, because that's where my skills are. And so I've been thinking about just the challenge of being completely cut off from, or cut off, I should say, off life support, as I used to call it, because really, you compare any type of a house around the nation and around the world to a patient on life support. If the electricity gets cut off, guess what happens? The people suffer that live in that house, have no heat, your water freezes, and you basically, what are you going to do? And to have all these elements that you need for everyday life that are so essential to anybody, and be in charge of that is, I think, a great giant step forward as far as independence for individuals and for families, but also saves the environment on the other hand, because it has such a low carbon footprint as this, as the house exists, you know, maybe over 100 years or maybe longer, saving the environment along the way. And so, yeah, it was a dream for me to do this and to actually bring it into the physical. And as we are, I think a lot of it was gut feeling, how to do things, because I've been around and I've studied it for such a long time. But at the other hand, as I was building it, there popped new ideas all the time. And I just saw it as a grand experiment, and it turned out really, really good. And I've been trying to, you know, cover the back door, so to speak. So if there was anything not quite sufficient, I would have another way to complement for it. For instance, I was trying to find how well should I insulate the house, and how much window space should I have. And I went to a company that was an engineering company to try and figure out exactly what type of backup heat I should have, just in case all these things wouldn't work out. And that company wanted to know everything, of course, what kind of windows, what would the walls exist out of, and floors, and color of the roof, and all these things. And at the end, they could not really give me a BTU number that would sufficiently give me the backup heat, because the whole structure was done so differently than the standard tables would allow to calculate, that it had to be done by gut feeling, or by, yeah, I think this will be right. And that's what I did, and it came out pretty nicely in all areas, I think.
So if it gets a real cold winter and you don't have sufficient heat for the sun, you have electric heaters that heat up the...
No, there is a propane tank that they have buried, and we have a 98 efficient evaporating boiler, as it's called.
Right. I thought, I mean, electricity is not too efficient, so I was wondering how you did that. So that's...
Yeah. So that's the way that gets done. But we also have a Russian-style wood stove in the middle of the house that is a large stove. I think it's about 32 inches wide and about 2 feet tall, and we have all kinds of cooking devices hooked up with that too. That's the so it doubles up as a cooker. It can be done used as a cooker and a grill, but it also in the wintertime will work together with this thermal mass, which is the definition of Russian or Finnish stoves. You know, they have Tilkiv stoves, as you have a massive amount of stone or soapstone or concrete around its heat source that will do the operate in the same principles as passive solar heat does. You know, the heat source and the battery, which is the thermal mass. We have that in our house as the backup. So in the days of Armageddon, when 3 days of darkness and what have you, we will be saved as well. So,
except if the Yellowstone volcano goes off, then...
You can't cover for everything.
Right, that's right. You know, on a side note, I've had people talking about that, and the volcano is alleged... they've gone off, 600,000 years ago.
Correct, yes.
And they'll say, well, it could go off any time. And I said, well, yeah, it could, but it could be another 10,000 years. I mean, when it comes to the Earth, 1,000 years here and there is nothing. But to us, it's many lifetimes.
Yeah. Even if it's 100 years, I won't be around anymore.
Yeah. The kids will go, thanks, Dad. They're blown up.
Yes. Not fun.
I'm looking
but,
also...
I think, you know, we live close to Yellowstone Park, but I know that that last eruption blew 600 cubic miles of dirt into the atmosphere. I think that will pretty much extinguish everybody from eating spinach or salads for a while. You know what I mean? You have that much dirt into the atmosphere.
I mean, think of that number, 600 cubic miles of dirt. That's a lot.
600 cubic miles, yes. Yeah. That's massive.
So what I don't think I look at your, as I go through your pages, I'm looking at the house, I'm noticing it seems to be, is it in like a bowl of some type? Is the area around it higher?
We had quite a bit of extra dirt, and our neighbor has a bit of a junkyard right in front of us. So I tried to build a berm so I wouldn't see that all the time.
Okay, all right. So, you know,
it is a little bit in a dip, yeah.
And those solar panels on that ridge, that's the main electrical solar panels, and the solar panels on your garage would be the hot water heating units?
That is correct. The panels on the garage are evacuated tube hot water heaters, solar hot water heaters. So they put hot water in three storage tanks that we have in the basement, each 80 gallons. So there's 240 gallons downstairs that are being charged by these evacuated tubes, heat exchanging technology there. And that storage, that 240 gallons of storage, does all these different jobs that are required in the house, the floor heat, the domestic warm water, the warm water loop in the gutters for snow melt, which is a manual thing, by the way. We do that only when it snows. So those things have a massive amount of work to do, usually.
Yeah, it really does surprise, at least for me, it really does show how beautiful, how nice a efficient house can be. When you would think that so much suffering or giving up of comfort, and yet this is about as open, as free as open a house I've ever seen, and it's just amazing.
Well, I was hoping that this would entice people to do more of these things because I've had a bank financing, I'm refinancing this now, and there is no problem financing it because it follows all the requirements and it's normal in its look and has all these. If the banker asks what kind of heat do you have, I say it's propane.
Right.
I'm not telling him about solar, even though it doesn't hurt that, but that's what they want to hear, the conventional thing, the propane, the electrical. And even though I hardly use it, it's still there. And it's also a good thing to have for eventual backup because, it's always possible that someday you need to replace your windmill or your solar panels and you don't want to have to move out because of that.
Right.
Let's say you have a hailstorm or something like that. It doesn't happen very often, but a monster-sized hailstorm and a storm that would destroy your solar panel, then you may be without power for a few weeks. And then it's nice that you have the grid power.
And I got a question that's coming in from Gord, who's in Alberta, Canada. He says, hi, I'm wondering if Powell has a feel for geothermal energy building into the ground or how long this... Oh, that's one question. And the second question is how long this thermal battery might last through periods of 30 to 40 degrees below zero. So I guess one thing he's asking about building into the ground.
Yeah. I actually looked into that because I know there's a marvelous technology that gives you basically 3 kilowatts of heat for 1 kilowatt of output, which is, of course, a win-win situation. That's perfect. But the problem is the heat pumps that you need for those systems require quite a bit of startup electricity, initial power to get them going. And that does not fit very well with an alternative system because it's solely 110. And you can make those systems to be 220 so that these pumps can run from it, but it means adding a lot of solar panels.
Oh, I see.
So it doesn't really complement the other technology so well. But I would advise that technology definitely for someone that is on the grid and isn't thinking about having their heat completely from solar power or wind power. And then the other question is about freezing conditions. The pipe that gets buried to heat exchange, to take the so-called the heat out of the earth and put it in the house for heating, you know, through heat exchanging. They are being buried usually below the frost line. That should be done below the frost line. In Canada, Alberta, I would think you would have the frost go down maybe 7 or 8 feet even. But below that, the temperature of the earth is always the same. It's 52 degrees approximately, between 50 and 52 degrees. And that temperature can be used for geothermal heating.
And so that is that area, depending on where you are, is where you're actually pumping this heat in during the summer, and then you're pulling it out during the winter.
No, no, that is the system that I have installed in my house here, but it's not
okay.
Technically geothermal technology. It could be called that way, but it's, what should I say, maybe a passive geothermal
technology.
And what this gentleman is talking about is an active geothermal system that brings heat from the earth into the house by means of a geothermal pump, a heat pump.
It'd be nice to get a pump out to one of those steam vents or water vents in from that volcano.
Oh.
You can pull some of the heat out with that.
That's right. You probably wouldn't even need a pump. You just need a little circulating pump. But this heat pump has the ability, just like a refrigerator, you know how a refrigerator cools inside that box. And, you know, if you've ever had your hand behind the refrigerator, you know that there's warm air there coming out. And that's the warm air, basically, not only from the compressor, but also from inside of the refrigerator and the freezer that's being pumped out.
Right.
And that's the heat pump that works with thermal, geothermal heat does exactly the opposite. So it takes that temperature and makes it hotter, condenses the heat through a different fluid and brings it into the house as heat that can be used for heating the house, floor heat or what have you.
Actually, I also, as I poke around your website, noticed that you are offering the architect-ready plans for the house so people can learn from all this work you've done. I mean, for a very modest price, they could literally build your house, I mean, obtain the plans to build your house, and it's ready for an architect to read and do.
Yes, exactly, for a builder to do it, actually. And there's even the mechanical systems are, you can purchase those by, you know, you can purchase the solar system, the water collection system, and they're even less money if you wanted to just do it with your own design house. You could do that as well.
Yeah, you could just add a system to it. I see. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to buy the whole design. You know, this is a design that I did, but it doesn't necessarily to be built exactly like that. You could do different designs.
Huh. That's it. Now, if someone, I was going to save this for the last half hour, we can continue on in there. If someone wanted to say they have a conventional house, how could someone who can't build a complete house like this, what could they do to their house to help become less dependent?
Well, I certainly think that passive solar heat is a great way to have the sun maximize, for your heat that you need in the house. Yeah, passive solar design is definitely the way to go. Then secondly, I would think water, in my opinion, water is more important than power. People have lived without power for centuries, but they've never lived without water.
Hmm.
And if you can collect water from the roof and you can have your roof be of a surface that is non-toxic, so that you can collect the water fairly pure just from the rain, then that is definitely worth doing. That's an old technology that's been around, ever since mankind. I believe in Africa they still do it like that, and in Hawaii as well. Many people collect the water from their roof and just purify it and use it for all kinds of household uses. All the technologies that I did here can be used, of course. Some of them cost money and some of them don't cost so much money, especially if you're designing your house from scratch. I believe many of these things would hardly take any more money if you were counting on doing them right from the onset.
Right.
If you had to retrofit a house, some things become more difficult.
Because I was thinking that in my case here, in my house, I have a rather small house, but it's surrounded by huge oak trees. So that the good news is it's cool in the summer, but I'm not going to get the light to heat the house or solar panel. Well, in the winter I could get light to heat the house because the leaves are gone. But as far as solar panel generating electricity, I'm noticing your house is out in the sun, so I would imagine it's better to have the house exposed to the sun for these reasons?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Especially, every house, of course, has a south, east, and west side, obviously, and it's especially important that the south side is exposed if you wanted to do passive solar heat.
All right, well, hold on there. We'll come back and continue.
Sure, certainly.
With the last half hour, as we're talking with Powell about his hybrid homes, True Word Hybrid Homes, OasisHybridHomes.com is his website, that you can not only see this amazing house, there's videos and pictures and all that, but you can actually buy plans for it or parts and subsystems of it. That's pretty excellent. Talk about saving energy. Everybody had one of these homes. Who knows what our energy dependence would be? We'll be right back after this.
Are you getting your greens? I'm James Othianchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Now you can have your greens and drink them too with Innerfood by Inner Health Botanicals. Innerfood is 70% organic and 100% natural without fillers and is a whole food product totally assimilated by the body. Innerfood is spirulina, chlorella, dulse, kelp, spinach, alfalfa, barley, wheatgrass, rosehip, beetroot, and much more in real amounts. Not just a sprinkle to fill out an inflated but impotent list of ingredients. Just mix a tablespoon in your protein shake or in your favorite fruit juice and you are good to go and go and go. Other greens on the shelf typically weigh 300 grams and sell for between $35 and $70. Innerfood is a full 400 grams, 33% more, for $39.95 plus shipping. Simply go to our website, feedtofire.com, and click on any InnerHealth Botanical banner and you're ready to order. Or call 866-762-9238 and be sure to mention you heard them on Feet to the Fire. Innerfood, building health from the insides out. Most people think of addictions relating to drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. However, obsessive-compulsive actions taken to excessive levels have the same biochemical goal. They stimulate the creation of natural feel-good hormones, but at a cost that causes more harm in the long run. And prescribed drugs are often many times more dangerous and addictive than the symptoms they aim to treat. AddictionSupplements.com have proven supplements that supply the brain with the nutrients it needs to naturally rebalance the biochemical system, which is the real cure for the real cause. AddictionSupplements.com has cutting-edge supplements designed by real science and real doctors, such as Dr. Charles Gant, MD. Interested in turning your life around? Point your browser to AddictionSupplements.com.
Make sure you stay tuned, because you're listening to Feet to the Fire.
Could you feed your family for a year, 2 years, or more from your garden if you had to? Do you have the right kind of seeds? Can you save your seeds from your harvest to plant next year? Heirloom Organics non-hybrid seed packs are a sustainable gardening choice of home, homestead, and professional gardeners throughout North America. Heirloom Organic seed packs are designed with your specific space, light, and nutritional needs in mind. A one-pound selection of 22 seed varieties that can feed two people for a year for just $99. Got a family? The family pack has 27 seed varieties to feed a family of four. There's even a homestead pack that has 31 varieties of seeds to feed eight people for 1 year for under $250. And don't forget, these are organically grown and 100% non-genetically modified. And forget the Terminator gene that prevents you from saving seeds for next year's crop. The heirloom organic seeds can be harvested and saved from each generation to be planted the next year. Just go to our website at feed2fire.com and click on the heirloom ad to access a lifetime of natural nutrition and wholesome eating the way it was meant to be. Want to get the word out about your website or blog that addresses topics found on Feet to the Fire? Send us 20 seconds of either proofread text or a voice recording, and we will randomly play it on both our live and archived versions of the show. Email the audio or text to f2f@innersights.com.
Contact James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. That's f2f@innersites.com. There is a video chat room to see James in action as well as other F2F listeners. www.ivisit.com has the free software to download and access the Feet to Fire video chat room. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancey.
Talking with Powell Helderloos, talking about his hybrid homes that he has designed and built, OasisHybridHomes.com. And welcome back, Powell.
Thank you, James.
As I was on a break, I was looking at the design of the house, and I wondered if there was a kind of a critical size that's needed for this to work. In other words, is there a house that's too big or too small for this design to work?
I don't believe so. I think it can be It can always work. There's a few restrictions, you know, like you were pointing out, if you have big oak trees right in front of the in the lot and you don't have space to move your house far enough back for the sun to come in, then you obviously couldn't do this passive solar or even active solar design for your house. Another critical thing is the roof area that you have. If you wanted to collect fresh water, there needs to be enough roof area so that in combination with precipitation that is in your locale, that it would work for an independent water supply to your house. So some of those things, yes, they are, depending on whether they can be done in a particular area or not.
But even so, you would have a percentage of success, is that you may not be able to...
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I think all these different techniques, they can each be taken as an individual part as well. You know, if you don't have sun, well, maybe you don't have wind, or maybe very often people that don't have much sun, they have more water, which will help make it a lot cheaper if you have more water. And if you had a running creek on your property, you might be able to do a little turbine, water turbine, hydro turbine, which is a fabulous technique as well. If you had that, that's even preferable. If it's a year-round creek, then very dependable, more dependable than the sun or the wind. You would have a constant way of generating energy for your house.
Exactly. This actually is kind of how I would envision it, in that there's not one system here doing it all. It's a bunch of systems working together
that makes it work. That's why I call it the element harvesting house. It takes advantage of everything. And like I say on the website, there is really no bad weather day, because I rejoice when it snows, when it rains, when the wind blows, when the sun shines. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So it's fantastic, because you really get a feel that nature matters. When you live in a house like this, it really does matter, and it's almost like a breathing organism. You know, when the sun shines, you have wonderful free heat in the house and free power in the house. When it rains, well, then you don't have the power so much, but then it collects water in your tanks, which you also need. So it's wonderful. I mean, that's the way all of nature really operates. We don't, you know, the animals don't complain when it rains outside, or when it's cold outside, or when it snows, or all these things are needed to sustain life. All of them are needed.
Yeah, if it doesn't get cold, then you're going to have a whole different level of insects that can live through the winter.
Absolutely, and look at this marvelous system that we have, you know, that the Mother Nature has, I should say, of storing water in the form of ice and snow on the high mountaintops, so that we have some during the summer.
Right.
Isn't that a marvelous idea? A marvelous thing. I mean, couldn't think of it as a human being. Mother Nature is much wiser like that.
Yeah, reminds me of a joke someone told me once, where these couple of scientists and God got together, and the scientists were going to make humans. And so God reaches down, takes the dirt, forms a human, and he breathes life into it. But then the first scientist steps up, he reaches down, grabs the dirt, and God says to him, "Hey, get your own dirt."
Oh, great.
So what you're doing here is you're kind of looking out into the world and learning from how the world has done it. I mean, we're looking at an amazing ecosystem of plants and animals and everything all working here together, and it's been around for quite a while. And you're looking out into it and saying, how could I emulate this to harvest the elements to work to my advantage?
Well, I think that's exactly it. We've gotten in our own way with our marvelous brain that we have. You know, we've gotten away, so far removed from taking advantage of nature and using Mother Nature's gifts that are already there, and replaced it with technologies that are actually harming the environment. They're not circular. They don't give back to the earth, which all natural systems do, and that's how they sustain life. But we are, because of our technology and because we don't calculate in our the cost to the environment, we are actually destroying it in the process. And that is, I think, where our change of mind has to come in. We have to get a change of heart and a change of attitude and a change of consciousness that whatever we calculate as cost to our own needs, the environment needs to be included in that, and the cost to the environment. You know that London used to be much more polluted in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution than it is now. That's because people didn't have a notion of what it does when you put that much fumes in the air, you know, what it does to the health of the people and the health of the environment.
And we're getting,
get to that point. I'm sorry.
We're getting a very, very poignant reminder of it down in the Gulf of Mexico with that oil going on.
Isn't that the truth?
I've been yelling about it here because, in my opinion, it's being underreported. This could be the greatest disaster that hits hits mankind, because these oil veins, I'm calling them, are bleeding at unprecedented rates, and there's little understanding of how to stop it. Now, it's like, what's one thing to 100% way to stop this was not to drill 100%, you know?
Yes.
And now,
well,
that it's,
I think that there possibly are technologies that could have prevented this. You know, when you drill a mile under sea, there's obviously, and you have a big platform that's floating at the top of the sea, I would think there's some major problems that could go wrong with that kind of a setup. And obviously they haven't, the engineers, or maybe it was just the oil company, hasn't thought it through how to actually fill in all the gaps of what possibly even in a remote instance could happen.
I guess the best way I can get it is that if they're telling the truth, is the pressure in which the oil came out is unprecedented, and the equipment was not rated for that pressure, which they didn't even know was possible. Now, if that's all true, okay, fine, all right. But, again, you don't have to drill it. I mean, you don't have to drill it. If we had homes like this and we had actually businesses and systems that are working to save energy.
That's I'm hoping to gain, at least on this level, if we can, you know, limit or maybe completely eliminate the need for fossil fuels to be piped to the houses, you know, of families and individuals, then we would be definitely some steps ahead. And so we're doing in the housing industry what, you know, the Prius, Toyota Prius is doing, and some other hybrid vehicles are doing for the auto industry, because people still don't want to give up their comforts. That's the problem. But as a nation and as individuals too, we need to think about what we are doing and what the cost is to the environment and what the cost is to our children and the next generation.
Yeah, it will be great to be able to take these hybrid cars and plug them into a solar panel, but here's a problem that I came across, is that, say I have a hybrid car and I plug it into a solar panel or a windmill, in essence, I'm avoiding the road fuel tax because I'm buying less gasoline.
Right.
So they'll have to come up with some system to report your mileage in order to, because right now, as far as I know,
I'm sure you're not doubting the ingenuity of the government to come up with some way to tax your air even, right?
Right.
Your breath.
Well, actually,
they're quite clever at that.
Actually, on this whole subject of the carbon tax, it really comes down to a tax on the air, because you have, for example, I've had it explained to me that you have, say, Illinois, for example, where I live, they have a lot of nuclear power.
Yes.
And country, states like Virginia have mostly coal powered. Well, they're under this carbon initiatives, they're looking pretty bad. So what they're doing is they're buying power from Illinois to put in their portfolio. The problem is they're building wind farms in Illinois, and they're selling the power to Virginia. Okay, but also in Illinois, since the carbon credits are handed out, there's a lot of extra carbon credits here, so they're selling them to other places so they can be dirty and pay the credit. And so all is said is done. There's a good portion of that which is really not getting cleaned up. It's just kind of shuffling around. Okay, this state has more nuclear energy. This one doesn't, so we'll give you some of our credits. And
our society is so money-based, and that, I think, is part of the problem. I mean, all the problems that we see are basically resulting from greed, and that is our sole problem as a human race right now, I believe. I mean, look at the whole economic crisis and all the corruption going on with that. I mean, it's all because people are too greedy. not everybody, but, you know, in essence, our whole system is built on making as much money as possible, and who cares about what kind of effect it has either on the environment or on our fellow men. And that is not right. I mean, I'm all for free enterprise system. I think it's a great way to bring creativity out in everyone. But if it goes at the cost of life itself, which it is, then there's something wrong. It's going beyond what we should be doing. We should enhance our creativity, but we can't do it at the cost of living beings and Mother Earth. That's what I think.
I don't understand how a company can own the land. For example, there's an oil well in a particular area, and or prospect of oil. Then an oil company will buy the land, and they'll harvest the oil and sell it to us. We all need energy on this planet. I mean, all the people who need energy that more than they can produce themselves, which is like everybody almost. Yeah. And so how could a company own part of the planet, which belongs to all the people, and then turn around and sell it to us? I could see that you can hire the company to take out our oil out of the ground and be paid for that. They get a service for doing that, you know. But how do they get off owning the copper, owning the oil, and owning the areas? See, that's that part, I don't understand that.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, you know, if you look at South America, Ecuador is the first country that has made all water a public resource. You know, people can't buy any water rights and bottle it and then sell it in the stores and things like that because it's everybody's water. I think that is a good thing because water in particular is a moving element. You know, they say that this during the time of the dinosaurs, there was exactly the same water as there is now. As a matter of fact, the same water that we are drinking was probably also consumed by dinosaurs in some way. It's an interesting concept, but here water cycles through nature, through us, through plants, then goes up in the air, has snow, and it comes back to us. But in the meanwhile, we are the generation that are polluting this air. And some companies, to come back to those companies, are actually buying up water rights in Africa and not allowing people to actually have access to their own water that comes from their own land. That seems criminal.
There was a country in South America, and boy, the name escapes me now.
Ecuador.
I don't think it was some other country that a company came in and bought all the water rights, and they made it illegal to use to store rainwater, and
yes,
they had a riot, and they rescinded that law because the people just rioted.
Hmm.
But that's crazy. Illegal to collect rainwater. See, I can see it happening in the United States because they'll say, just like you can't have raw milk, and they're starting to restrict.
Well, it is actually already happening in the United States. I believe that Portland or someplace in Oregon, anyways, has prohibited water collection. There's quite a few places that prohibit water collection. Also, some drought states like Alabama and Georgia, I believe water collection is not allowed.
Well, that's
because
that's great.
Yeah, because they need to have. If you look at you know, they say follow the money, but in this case, follow the water. If you look at it, it comes from the sky and it falls on your roof or it falls on the ground, collects all these contaminants from cars, from agricultural practices, pesticides, and who knows what. It goes into the rivers, then somehow we get our drinking water from that, all mixed together, including sewage. And you wonder, why can we not get it directly from the source, which is from the sky, and collect it from our own roofs and be away from that whole polluting cycle?
They'll sell it in terms of it's unsafe to have collect your water. You might be unsanitary. Have to be careful with it, but would you please let us do that kind of thing and quit taking care of it for us? In the meantime, charging us a premium to do that?
Well, you know that drinking water being safe is definitely not a claim that can be held across the board anymore. I think that's quite a while ago now, but in 93 there was high water in Milwaukee, and sewage got mixed in with the drinking water, and they didn't discover that until about 100,000 people had fallen ill because of that. And the water was so polluted that if you were to fly to Milwaukee at that day and took a glass of water from the airport there, you could have gotten sick just from that one glass of water.
They're passing rules to put controls on having neighborhood where they sell the plants, vegetables, and fruit and vegetable market, farmer's market. They're putting rules on that.
Oh, yeah, farmer's market, yeah.
It's all geared. I mean, really, you know, being quite straightforward and honest about it, it's geared because they want you to go through the system so that you buy the food from their system and not each other, to buy water from their system and not from the sky.
Right.
There's even...
Makes money that way, see. Nobody makes any money, and you collect it from the roof.
Well, I guess you're in a good state there for that, because Montana seems to be pretty independent.
Yeah. Yeah, they are fairly independent. People are really, I think, connected to the land here. A lot of hunters, of course, and there's a lot of deer, too. But and now we can even hunt wolves, too. So, but... It's a beautiful place, and I guess we are some kind of a predator too in many ways. But
so you have we're just about out of time though. People can actually, if they happen to be in Montana, there's a tour that you have of your home?
Yes, I do tours every month. I've actually just started to take a little break from that because. It's good to have breaks sometimes.
Yeah.
But for these next 3 months, May, June, and July, I have actually not put any tours up on the website. But if there was a group of people that wanted to come, I will make some time for them.
All right, because, you know, Chris is trying to get me to move out there, and I'd love to. But I'm still financially tied here. But who knows, maybe I'll get out there sometime. Nothing else to visit. I'd love to see your house.
It's a beautiful place, and it's only about 20 miles away from Yellowstone Park. We have hot springs. This is a fantastic vacation.
Well, Paul, it's been good talking to you. It's been very inspirational because I maintain that among all the faults in the humans, there are some pretty smart ones out there with answers to our solutions, and I want to put you in that category.
Oh, thank you so much.
And
great talking with you, too.
The website is... OasisHybridHomes.com, and thank you again, Paul.
Thank you, James.
I should say, thank you, Vel. That's about as far as I get.
Thank you, Vel. Yeah, thank you, Vel.
All righty, there you go. Solutions. I love solutions. They're not as dramatic, they're not as scary as the problems, but the solutions come quietly and they come up behind you and say, hello, here I am. And it takes people to make these solutions, so hats off to Powell for his systems, and he's offering it so people can literally buy the plans and hand it over to a contractor, and there you go. Yeah, it might have to modify it depending where you live, but that's great. That's great. Solutions. Well, let's see. Next week, we're going to have a kind of an interesting show. I've been kind of looking forward to this. It's a little spooky, but it's going to be interesting. Nigel Kerner here is going to be here for 3 hours talking about the UFO gray phenomenon and soul harvesting. Ooh, spooky. Remember, the reach for the skies within. See you next week.
Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.